my cat's dealer, I'm not sure that's a good idea. Come on, take a walk on the wild side. There was that smile again. He was making it difficult to say no, and she was pretty sure he knew it. Let me guess, you have spaghetti leftovers you need to unload? Actually, I was thinking the cork and cleaver, around 7. Christy Lynn felt a skitter of nerves. Dinner. Out. Probably not a good idea. But it was business, wasn't it? A business dinner? With a client? In a public place? How dangerous could it be? Okay, then. I'll run home for my notes when we close and meet you there. Christy Lynn waved as she stepped into the lobby of the Cork and Cleaver. Wade was seated at the end of a long oak bench, looking handsome and crisp in dark slacks and a light blue Oxford. He stood when he saw her, wrapping up his chat with Queenie Peterson, who, in spite of owning the restaurant, appeared to also be playing hostess. Queenie's face brightened when she spotted Christy Lynn. Well now, Wade didn't say it was you he was meeting. How lovely. Just a little business, Christy Lynn assured, not liking the matchmaker gleam in Queenie's eye. Wade asked me to give him some feedback on his novel. Queenie leaned close, voice lowered. Are you sure? He's awfully dreamy. He's a client, Queenie. We're here to talk about his book, and that's it. Fine, Queenie sighed, reaching for a pair of menus from the hostess stand. But for the record, I think you're crazy. Wade trailed behind as Queenie led them to a dimly lit corner table. He held out Christy Lynn's chair before settling across from her. I'm a client? He asked, with raised brows. I needed to set the record straight. She tends to go off the rails when there's a good-looking guy around. You think I'm good-looking? He had opened his menu, so that only his eyes were visible, but she could tell by the tiny creases at the corners that he was smiling. She fought a smile of her own as she spread her napkin in her lap. Don't beg for compliments. It isn't attractive. Now let's decide what we're eating so we can get to work. Wade grunted. All work and no play. Makes Wade a better writer. Christy Lynn finished primly. Let's do the crab dip. It's delicious. By the time dessert arrived, she had checked off most of the large ticket items on her notepad. Across from her, Wade sat pushing a bite of cheesecake around his plate, his face stony. She wished she could read him better, but he had a way of closing down that made it impossible to guess his mood. Look, I know no one likes negative feedback, but it's part of the gig. And I'm not saying it isn't good. Quite the opposite, in fact. You have a wonderful voice, fresh and clean, stripped down but still evocative. And the story mechanics are strong in the beginning. The problem is your main character. I haven't read all the pages you gave me yet, but as a reader, I'd have probably put the book down about halfway through. I just stopped caring. Wow. Wade put down his fork and looked at her. I really am a client. Christy Lynn felt a pang of sympathy. She wasn't used to dealing with writers face to face. Her clients were spread from Nova Scotia to Scotland, which meant she gave most of her feedback by email or phone. It was different when you had to look someone in the eye and stomp all over their heart's work. Come on, she said, trying to keep it light. You didn't really ask me to read it, so I'd fallen all over you. You wanted to know what wasn't working, and I've told you, or at least given you my opinion, and it's not like any of it's fatal. You just need to know your characters better. Do a little psychoanalyzing. Wade glowered over his wine glass. On my characters or myself? Sometimes it's the same thing. You think I'm Vance? I have no idea who Vance is based on, or if he's based on anyone. In fact, all I know about him is he's an angry guy with a past, and anyone can write that guy. Tell me where he's vulnerable. Show me what makes him bleed. Because if he doesn't bleed, no one's going to care if he gets the girl. Wade was quiet as he signed for the check, leaving Christy Lynn to wonder what he was thinking. Was he nursing a bruised ego? Digesting what she'd said? Already pondering how he might apply her suggestions? Judging by his grim expression as they made their way to the lobby, it could be all of the above, or none. After the close atmosphere of the restaurant, It felt good to step out into the cool night air. They were quiet as they crossed the parking lot, feet crunching on the pea gravel, shoulders brushing occasionally. "You're quiet all of a sudden," Christy Lynn said when they reached the Rover. "I can't tell what you're thinking, but I hope you're not miffed because of anything I said in there."
"No," he said, stuffing his hands in his pockets. "I'm not miffed. I'm just trying to figure out if it's worth the trouble. Maybe Simone was right. Maybe it's all just a big pipe dream."
"It isn't a pipe dream, Wade. The book has real potential. In fact, with a little tweaking, you might really have something."
"I can't tell if you're being a friend now or an editor."
She smiled at that. "One doesn't necessarily preclude the other, and I meant every word. Just show your readers that there's more to Vance than anger. Give them some layers to peel back. Show the chinks in his armor. He can be mad as hell at the start of the book, but at some point, we need to see that there's a way out of all that darkness."
"And if there isn't?"
Christy Lynn was fumbling in her purse for her car keys. The sudden gravity in his tone made her look up. "There's always a way out."
"You say that like you believe it."
She looked up through her bangs to meet his gaze. "I have to. Otherwise, you don't have a book or a life."
"Was that for you or for me?"
She shrugged. "Both, I guess. The other day, Missy said something that got me thinking. She said the word never represents all the doors we keep closed, that when we say never, we close ourselves off from the hope that things can ever be different." Wade tilted his head to one side, studying her in a way that made her want to look away, but made looking away impossible. She felt rooted to the spot, paralyzed by something she could feel but not name. Finally, he reached up to brush a stray lock of hair from her eyes, tucking it behind her ear.
"Are there things you'd like to be different, Christy Lynn Parker?"
His touch was warm and unsettlingly familiar, and for an instant, Christy Lynn felt one of Missy's closed doors nudge open, but it was a door almost certain to lead to heartache, for both of them. She took a step back and would have taken another if she wasn't already pressed against the car door. "Please, don't do this. Don't try to get in my head and figure me out. I promise you, it isn't worth it."
"It was just a question."
He was standing so close, his voice seemed to vibrate in her chest.
"Do you know the answer?"
She sighed, dropping her head. "Sometimes it just is what it is, Wade. There are things we can change, and things we can't. The key is knowing the difference."
"Wait, weren't you the one just lecturing me about the word never? Maybe you should take your own advice."
"Actually, it was Missy's advice. I was just thinking out loud." Christy Lynn glanced about helplessly, wishing there was some way to escape without making a fool of herself. The longer they lingered, face to face in the nearly deserted lot, the more vivid the memory of their brief kiss became, stirring impulses she didn't dare trust. She cleared her throat, fidgeting with her keys. "Look, I need to get home. It's getting late, and I've got a ton of emails to answer." Wade took a quick step back.
"I did it again, didn't I?"
"Did what?"
"Pushed you. Scared you. I didn't mean to."
She shook her head, smiling sadly as she unlocked the door and slid behind the wheel. There was no way to explain what she was feeling. It was like standing at the edge of a cliff, longing inexplicably to hurl herself off, knowing she'd never survive the fall. She wasn't cut out to be the other half of anything, no matter how tempted she was. And she was tempted. "You didn't scare me," she said, reaching for the door handle. "I scared me."
"Wait."
Wade grabbed the door before she could pull it closed.
"I don't know what that means."
"You don't have to know," she said, letting the smile slip. "As long as I do." 41. Sweetwater, Virginia, August 9th, 2017. Christy Lynn turned the freshly delivered FedEx envelope over in her hands.
Peter had called yesterday to let her know he was finally overnighting the trust papers, asking her again if she was sure she wanted to proceed. Nothing was final until the papers were signed. But after weeks of weighing the pros and cons, she saw no reason to change her mind. It wasn't like there'd be a lot of personal contact. Peter had strongly urged her to name him as point person, expressing concerns that in the event of an irregularity, she might prove less than objective. She agreed, not because she didn't trust her objectivity, but because keeping a little distance might be a good thing. Once she'd helped Retta settle the housing and school questions, her duties would amount to little more than reviewing the monthly statements. But her conscience would be clear. She slid the pages free, staring at the words on the top sheet, Revocable Living Trust. She leafed through the rest, noting the tiny green and yellow flags strategically placed near the lines to be signed by each party, then realized she'd better call Retta and let her know her copies would be arriving in the next day or so. It took three rings before Retta finally picked up. As usual, she sounded breathless and worn to the nub. It's Christy Lynn, Retta. How are you?
Fine. Just outside on the porch with Iris. Is something wrong?
It was the same question she always asked, as if she was always expecting trouble. Nothing's wrong. I was just calling to tell you my attorney sent out your copies of the trust paperwork, and they should arrive in a day or two. I asked him to send them so you'd have time to look everything over ahead of time.
That wasn't necessary, and I'm not likely to understand a word of it.
You could have Ray look at it, or if you'd like, I can have my lawyer call you and go over them. I want to make sure you understand how the trust is funded and exactly how those funds will be released to you.
No, not Ray, she answered abruptly. And I've got no reason to check up on you. Any woman who do what you're doing for Iris doesn't need to be questioned. Besides, you already explained it all. I won't have to come to Virginia to do the signing, will I? I don't see how I could manage that.
No, I'll come to you. I explained your situation to my attorney. All we have to do is make an appointment with a notary, sign the papers, and then mail them back. Once he's looked them over, he'll send us each a finalized copy. Would Saturday be okay? Or would you like a little more time? I don't want you to feel pressured.
I don't feel pressured. And time is something I'm running a little short on these days. Saturday will be fine.
Christy Lynn drained her coffee mug and zipped her overnight bag closed. Tolstoy looked on with an air of disapproval. He had already attempted to stow away three times and was clearly put out at being denied another opportunity. She'd be glad when things with the trust were finalized, and she could handle things from a safe distance. It wasn't so much the trip she minded, but the emotional hangover that tended to linger afterward, sometimes for days. She was about to drag the overnight bag up onto her shoulder when she heard what sounded like a car pulling into the drive. Frowning, she peered through the curtains, surprised to see Wade climbing out of his Jeep, a red to-go mug in his hand.
"Morning," he said brightly when she pulled back the door.
"What are you doing here? It's 7." She broke off when she spotted a dark green satchel sitting in the drive. "Is that a suitcase?"
"It's a duffel, actually. You said last week that you were leaving this morning, and I've decided to be your wingman."
"You just invited yourself?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
He tipped back the to-go mug and took a quick swallow.
"Think of me as your bodyguard."
Christy Lynn cocked an eye at him. "You think I need a bodyguard to meet with an 80-year-old woman?"
"Okay, then. I'm your chaperone, your entourage, your posse."
"Except none of those things are necessary."
"I don't like the idea of you driving all that way on your own."
"I've done it 3 times now."
"And each time you've come back looking like a zombie. This way I can do some of the driving and you can sleep. Or read the rest of my manuscript if you're so inclined."
Christy Lynn opened her mouth to protest, but Wade was one step ahead of her.
"I promise you'll be perfectly safe. Separate rooms, separate checks, separate everything."
She eyed him warily, but felt a little ashamed, too, that he'd been able to read her thoughts so easily. It isn't that, really. It simply isn't necessary. It's just some paperwork, a couple of signatures. As soon as I'm done, I'll check into the Days Inn, then drive back on Sunday. I don't need a wingman.
I know this is going to come as a nasty shock, Christy Lynn, but you're not Wonder Woman. You may not see the toll this has taken on you, but I do. You're exhausted and distracted, which isn't a good combo when you're about to get on the road. I'd like to help, if you'll let me.
I've got this. Really, I do.
Is it because you don't trust me?
Christy Lynn felt herself flush when she thought of their strained parting after dinner the other night. She had acted like a flustered schoolgirl. Don't be ridiculous. Of course I trust you.
Then say yes. It'll be like Thelma and Louise, but without the cliff thing.
Christy Lynn couldn't help laughing. She had to admit, having company on the long ride to Riddlesville wasn't a wholly unwelcome idea. All right, but I pick the music, and you don't get to complain. It was nearly 2 o'clock when they finally pulled into Riddlesville. Wade said nothing as Christy Lynn drove through the center of town, his expression grim as he took in the empty storefronts and boarded windows. The view didn't improve much as they headed west toward the outskirts of town, the pocked streets lined with listing houses and weed-choked yards. It wasn't until she slowed to make the turn into Retta's drive that he finally spoke.
Jesus.
It was barely a whisper. The natural reaction to finally seeing what she'd been talking about all these weeks.
I know, she said softly. It looks like ground zero.
Now, do you see? She wanted to say, but didn't. In fact, there wasn't time to say anything. Retta suddenly popped up out of one of the chairs on the front porch, a half-smoked cigarette caught between her fingers. Christy Lynn waved as she stepped down out of the Rover. Hey, Retta.
I thought I heard a car coming up the road. I wasn't sure what time to expect you, so I thought I'd sit out a while.
It wasn't until Wade threw open the passenger side door that Retta seemed to realize Christy Lynn wasn't alone.
Who are you?
This is Wade Pierce, Retta. He came to help me with the driving. He was a friend of Stevens. Retta looked him up and down, her cloudy eyes suddenly sharp. When she finished her inspection, she ground out her cigarette in the plastic ashtray on the railing and looked hard at Christy Lynn.
You're not sick, are you? You look a bit wrung out.
Christy Lynn felt, rather than saw, the pointed glance Wade threw in her direction. She chose to ignore it.
I'm fine, Retta. Just a little tired. Well, come on in. I've got a fresh pitcher of tea in the fridge. Are you hungry? I could fix you something.
No, thank you. We stopped for lunch. But some tea would be wonderful. They followed her up onto the porch and then into the house. The air was hot and close, and still smelled of this morning's breakfast. The TV was on, an old rerun of Gilligan's Island, with a sound turned way down. Retta clicked it off.
I've just put Iris down for a nap.
She was tidying as she moved about the living room, gathering socks, barrettes, scrunchies, and stuffing them into the pockets of her yellow gingham house dress.
Poor thing had another bad night. Oh, be careful there, she warned Wade, pointing to the floor littered with crayons. You'll break your neck if you step wrong. I'm afraid I learned that one the hard way.
Retta ran an eye around the room while Wade navigated the minefield of crayons. She hadn't been counting on him, and Christy Lynn could see that she was wary.
I'm not sure how long she'll be down, but she sleeps so poorly these days, I don't expect it'll be long. We can head over to the notary with the papers as soon as she's up. In the meantime, I'll pour the tea.
Christy Lynn picked up a well-thumbed copy of Reader's Digest from the couch and set it on the end table before taking a seat. Wade dropped down beside her, his knees nearly up to his chin as he sank into the rump-sprung cushions. His eyes met Christy Lynn's as Retta shuffled out of earshot, but he said nothing. A few minutes later, Retta reappeared with a pair of glasses and handed one to Christy Lynn.
I hope you like it good and sweet. Only way I know how to make it. And I'm sorry.
She paused as she handed Wade the second glass. I've already forgotten your name.
It's Wade, and I was weaned on sweet tea. Thank you.
Wade, she repeated, as if trying to commit it to memory. You were Stephen's friend?
A long time ago. We were roommates in college, but we, lost touch.
Retta nodded vaguely, as if it had nothing to do with her, then disappeared into the kitchen again. She returned moments later with her own glass and took a seat in the worn green recliner beside the couch. She looked vaguely distracted, bone-thin fingers clutching her tea glass, eyes darting furtively in Wade's direction. When the silence began to grow awkward, Christy Lynn reached for the FedEx envelope, but didn't immediately remove its contents.
Did you have a chance to look at the paperwork my attorney sent?
Retta nodded.
More or less. The money will go into an account every month for Iris. That's right, isn't it?
And for you, Retta. Remember, we talked about getting you some help and finding you a better place to live. Somewhere close to your doctor and good schools. And I'm going to help you with all of that when it's time. You'll receive a check each month to use for whatever you and Iris need, like an allowance. And that's it, really.
Retta nodded, fishing around in the pocket of her dress for a tissue. She blotted her eyes, then blew her nose. Don't mind me. I'm just a foolish old woman.
It suddenly struck Christy Lynn just how daunting all this must seem to a woman who had probably never signed a legal document in her life. I know this is a lot to digest. Are you sure you don't have any questions?
Will I need to save receipts or anything?
No, you won't need to account for how you spend the money. But in case something does come up, something out of the ordinary, I'm going to leave you my attorney's card. His name is Peter Hagen. That's who you'll call.
Retta put down her glass very slowly. Not you.
Christy Lynn exchanged a quick look with Wade. They had discussed this particular stipulation while on the road. Wade approved of the idea, glad she'd be able to maintain some distance, but she was already having second thoughts. Peter Hagen might be a highly skilled attorney, but he lacked anything like the legal equivalent of a bedside manner. He could be gruff and intimidating, and though he'd never come right out and said so, he had formed his own opinion of the Rawlings family.
Of course, I'll always be here to help you, Retta.
But Mr. Hagen is better equipped to handle the legal stuff. You'll have... Christy Lynn broke off abruptly, the hair on her arms prickling to attention as an ear-splitting wail suddenly careened down the hall. She knew the sound only too well, the blind panic of a child caught between sleep and waking. Retta was on her feet in an instant, scurrying as fast as her legs could carry her. It was a relief when she closed the bedroom door behind her, muffling the terrified shrieks. Wade was clearly spooked, perched on the edge of the couch, ready to spring into action should it be required.
What's happening? Should we be doing something?
Night terrors, Christy Lynn told him grimly, and there's nothing to do, except wait until she comes out of it. Retta says she has them pretty often. The good news is that at her age, she probably doesn't remember.
You sound like an expert.
I had them until I was 17. Wade's eyes widened, and for a moment, he looked at her as if he was seeing her for the first time.
But not anymore.
No, not anymore. It wasn't a lie. The dreams she'd been having since Stephen's death had nothing to do with night terrors, which tended to diminish with the onset of adolescence. I was an unusual case. Most kids grow out of them around 7 or 8. She paused, cocking her head.
Listen, it sounds like she's starting to come out of it.
A short time later, the bedroom door opened, and Retta appeared with a dazed Iris in tow.
It was a short one, thank the Lord.
She sagged into her chair and pulled Iris onto her lap.
Sometimes they go on for half an hour. This one wasn't so bad. Can you say hello to Miss Christy Lynn, Iris?
Iris seemed not to hear. She was sticky with sweat, or tears, or both, her face mottled with angry red splotches. But it was her eyes, glassy and vacant, that held Christy Lynn's attention, too reminiscent of her mother's that night at the morgue.
"It takes her a while to come all the way out," Retta said, patting Iris's back in a steady, comforting rhythm. "And then sometimes she doesn't come out at all. She just drops back to sleep, like nothing happened. I never know which it will be."
Wade seemed unable to take his eyes off Iris.
"How often does she have them?"
"Sometimes it's every night. Sometimes she goes weeks and nothing."
"Has she been to a doctor? Maybe there's something they can do."
Retta shook her head.
"I took her when they first started. They printed some pages off the computer and told me to read them. It basically said there was nothing they could do and that she'd eventually grow out of it."
Christy Lynn wondered if Retta had any idea just how long that might take, but decided to let the subject drop.
"Look, we don't have to go to the notary today. We can come back tomorrow when Iris is feeling better. We're staying over anyway."
Retta was about to respond when the heavy thump of feet sounded on the front porch. There was no knock, no greeting of any kind as Ray Rawlings came through the door. Retta's arms tightened almost imperceptibly around Iris, her face suddenly chalk white.
"What are you doing here, Ray? I have company."
Ray barely glanced in his grandmother's direction, locking eyes with Christy Lynn instead. He wore a shiny gray suit that fit too snugly at the waist and a red tie that had seen better days.
"Mrs. Ludlow, nice to see you again."
Christy Lynn fought down a shudder. His smile reminded her of a small rodent, hungry and sharp-faced. "Reverend?"
"Retta mentioned you'd be by. Nice of you to come all this way for our Iris."
Christy Lynn stared at him. "Our Iris?" Wade was suddenly on his feet, shoulders squared and clearly bristling.
"I don't believe we've been introduced, Reverend."
Ray studied Wade, but made no move to extend a hand.
"I'm Iris's uncle."
"And you are?"
"A friend of Ms. Parker's."
Christy Lynn shot Wade a sidelong glance. His fists were knotted tightly at his sides, the telltale muscle at his temple ticking ominously. Clearly, his gut reaction to the Honorable Reverend Rawlings aligned perfectly with her own. Ray was either oblivious or unimpressed, dismissing Wade with an icy glare before turning his attention to Iris. Crouching down on one knee, he held out his arms with a greasy smile.
"Come to Uncle Ray."
Iris was having none of it. She drew back against Retta, her chin tucked into her chest, like a turtle trying to retreat into its shell. He tried again. This time she turned her head, burying it in the crook of her great-grandmother's shoulder. Retta flashed her grandson an imploring look.
"She's just had one of her nightmares, Ray. You know how she is after. She doesn't..."
Ray silenced her with a look, clearly bent on having his way.
"Iris!" he barked again. "I'm talking to you."
It was Christy Lynn's turn to bolt to her feet. Ray Rawlings might be Iris's uncle, but she wasn't about to sit there and let him browbeat a little girl. Before she could open her mouth, Iris had scrambled off Retta's lap and ducked behind her legs. Ray feigned amusement, but his patience was clearly wearing thin. He cleared his throat, his cajoling smile beginning to fray.
"Now, sweetheart, there's no need to be shy. Don't you want to see your Uncle Ray?"
Christy Lynn found herself gritting her teeth. Who did he think he was fooling? Certainly not Retta, who was sitting frozen in her chair, or Iris, whose grip on her legs grew tighter with every word her uncle uttered. Ray glared menacingly.
"When someone tells you to come, young lady, you come."
Christy Lynn bent to scoop Iris up into her arms. It was the last straw. Apparently, it was the tipping point for Wade, too. He took an abrupt step forward.
"That'll do, Reverend."
Ray puffed out his chest, his face the color of a ripe plum.
Who the hell are you to tell me what we'll do in my own house?
Wade didn't blink.
I'm a guy who's smart enough to know when a kid's being bullied, and I believe this is Retta's house, not yours.
Retta fixed her grandson with pleading eyes.
Please, Ray, you're scaring her.
And just like that, Ray's bluster vanished, as if he'd suddenly remembered the part he was supposed to be playing.
Forgive me,
he said softly, folding his hands before him.
It's been a trying time. But I've come to share some news with Retta, and I suppose you should hear it too. After much prayer and soul-searching, my wife and I feel led by the Lord to take my sister's child into our fold, to love and raise as our own.
Christy Lynn wasn't sure if she was more stunned or horrified.
You feel led by the Lord?
Ray dipped his head piously, but said nothing. Christy Lynn laughed, a brief, sharp chuckle.
I must say, I find your sudden change of heart a bit surprising, especially for a man who, 2 weeks ago, was throwing around words like abomination.
The Lord works in mysterious ways, Mrs. Ludlow. As a man of God, I'm bound to do my Christian duty, and to do it with a glad heart.
That glad heart wouldn't have anything to do with the fact that your niece is about to come into an inheritance, would it? Ray took an abrupt step forward, and would have taken another, had Wade not checked him.
Exactly what are you accusing me of, Mrs. Ludlow?
Just what you think I'm accusing you of, Reverend. I can't help wondering if you'd still be eager to do your Christian duty if I were to change my mind and tear up the trust papers. Somehow I don't think so. Ray's man of God facade abruptly fell away.
In that case, I suppose we'd have to see what the courts had to say on the matter. I've spoken to a lawyer, and he feels the girl has a claim in her own right, which means your husband's money isn't yours to dole out as you see fit. Judges tend to frown on strangers poking their noses where they don't belong. Family should look after family.
Except you refused to look after her,
Christy Lynn shot back, eyeing him with open contempt. Now suddenly you're willing to bear your sister's sins dutifully? Forgive me if I find your sudden compassion suspicious. The corners of his mouth turned up slowly.
The Lord has shown me the error of my ways, Mrs. Ludlow, like Saul on the road to Damascus.
Spare me the Sunday school lesson, Reverend, and know that I meant every word I said just now. Iris will be taken care of, if it means I have to pay for every barrette and ice cream cone myself. But my attorney will make sure you never touch a dime of Iris's money. Still, if you want to go to court and air all of this publicly, I'm happy to take my chances. Retta looked at her with wide eyes, visibly horrified by the prospect of a court battle. But Ray seemed to be considering the words carefully. After a moment, he cleared his throat. His expression back to the chilly shrewdness Christy Lynn had glimpsed earlier.
Perhaps an agreement might be reached. A sort of compromise.
A compromise? Christy Lynn echoed warily, wishing she had listened to Wade's warning about unscrupulous relatives. She had misjudged the Reverend, or at least misjudged his motives. He wasn't just a pious ass. He was a sharp and cunning bastard. She'd been a fool not to see it, or to think a handful of papers could right all the wrongs in Iris Rawlings's life. Poverty was hard on a child, but it didn't compare with the pain of being invisible, unwanted, unloved. And for Ray Rawlings, Iris was all three. Christy Lynn fought down a shudder of revulsion. He was watching her now, through narrowed eyes, trying to read her thoughts and planning his next move.
I might.
He paused, clearing his throat, then flashed a wheedling smile.
That is, my wife and I might be open to some form of compensation.
You mean money, Christy Lynn flung back.
I mean a token of goodwill. Iris is, after all, the only child of my dear departed sister. Surely that's worth some small consideration. A modest sum agreed on by both parties. Paid discreetly, of course, for the loss of our darling little niece.
Christy Lynn stood speechless, still clutching a confused and terrified Iris. Retta looked equally speechless, though not quite surprised by her grandson's suggestion.
Why do I have the feeling this was where this was heading all along? You knew I'd never give you control of the trust, so you put on this little show, hoping I'd pay you to go away. Am I right?
Ray dipped his head, not quite in acknowledgement, but close enough.
Come now, Mrs. Ludlow. It isn't the means but the end that matters. This way everyone is happy. Retta keeps the girl and the bulk of the money, and I go away a few dollars richer for my sacrifice.
Christy Lynn was sickened to realize she was actually considering the proposal.
How do I know that's the end of it, that you'll just go away?
Ray smiled, exposing small, sharp teeth.
I'm a man of God, Mrs. Ludlow.
It was Wade's turn to react. He stepped past Christy Lynn and grabbed Ray by the arm.
Why don't we finish this outside, Reverend? Get your hands off me!
Christy Lynn took an abrupt step forward. Wade, don't. But Wade was already shoving the good Reverend toward the door, his expression one of barely suppressed fury. If she didn't step in, there was a good chance Ray was going to end up in an ambulance and Wade in the back of a police car. By the time she handed Iris off to Retta and caught up, Wade was already jerking the Reverend down the steps and out into the yard. Ray's face was the color of a beetroot, his arm swinging wildly without landing a single blow.
You'll end up in jail for this!
To Christy Lynn's surprise, the very pregnant Mrs. Rawlings suddenly emerged from the family van, loping toward the fray as fast as her swollen belly would allow.
Let him be! She bellowed sharply. That's a man of God you're assaulting!
But no one was listening. Nor were the words spewing from Ray's mouth particularly godly as he continued to flail, spittle flying like a rabid dog as he tried to shake Wade's hold. As far as Christy Lynn could tell, Wade had yet to throw a punch, his intent to restrain rather than harm. She was almost disappointed. Finally, Wade gave Ray's arm one last vicious yank, releasing him so abruptly, he nearly toppled over.
You're a big man, he said, through gritted teeth, as Ray stood wiping flecks of spit from his chin. Big on threats, big on bullying. So yes, by all means, let's go to court. But I don't think a custody battle was ever your intent. In fact, I think that's the last thing you want. You see, I've done a little homework, Reverend. There's a rumor, though I'm betting it's more than just a rumor, about a certain cheerleader from Riddlesville High School. Her name is Tina Gibson, a member of your congregation, I believe, sings in the youth choir. Ring any bells?
Ray dropped his arms, suddenly still. Ellen took a step forward, a hand on her belly. Ray? But Ray wasn't looking at his wife.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Let's see if I do, Wade responded coolly. According to my source, Tina had to go away for several months last summer, after a visit to a certain nurse over in Wheeler almost killed her. A visit you not only drove her to, but allegedly paid for. I couldn't verify that last part, but let's run with it anyway, shall we?
Christy Lynn stood open-mouthed, gaping at the drama unfolding before her. How on earth could he possibly know those things? And yet it was obvious he did know, because Ray had gone a terrible shade of gray, as if all the blood had drained from his body. He stood glaring at Wade, half of his shirt untucked.
It's a lie!
Not according to Tina's boyfriend, Doug Simpson, I believe his name was. Captain of the wrestling team, and very angry with you, apparently. He couldn't wait to spill the details. In fact, I'm pretty sure he'd be willing to spill them to anyone who'll listen, including a judge, if you're still inclined. But then, I'm betting you're not. I'm no expert, but I don't think there are a lot of judges who'd hand over a 3-year-old girl to that kind of scum. I could be wrong, though. Ball's in your court.
Ellen Rawlings hadn't moved a muscle during the exchange, but there were twin spots of color on her cheeks now. In three long steps, she closed the distance between herself and her husband, clearly seething.
You said it wasn't true. You swore.
Ray rounded on his wife, fists knotted at his sides.
Shut up, Ellen.
Wade was smiling now, but his eyes were hard, devoid of anything like humor.
Here's the long and short of it, Ray. If you pursue this scheme of yours, if you so much as think about coming after that child, or her money, or harassing your grandmother for so much as a penny from that trust, I'll make sure every person in this town knows what you are. The cheerleader, the check fraud, the real estate scheme, all of it. And that'll be the end of your precious congregation, and the collection plate that goes with it.
Ray's mouth worked mutely as he sawed at his tie. After a moment, he pivoted toward the van and stalked away, leaving his pregnant wife to trail after him. Christy Lynn held her breath until the van had pulled out of sight, then turned to look at Wade.
What just happened?
I think I've just gotten rid of the Reverend for you.
Christy Lynn nodded, a blend of confusion and relief.
Yes, I got that part. But how did you know about the cheerleader?
Like I told Ray, I did some homework.
You made another call.
I had a hunch, and it turned out to be right. Man's got quite a past if you talk to the right people. Even had a couple of arrests way back that I doubt his flock knows about. You were right. He was never going to court. Not with his past. But he was banking on you not knowing that.
That's why you wanted to come, she said, suddenly understanding. You wanted to be here in case he showed up and tried to pull something. But how did you know he would?
Wade shrugged. I didn't. The guys like that don't change their stripes. I wasn't about to let you get blindsided.
For a moment, Christy Lynn wasn't sure she could speak, the lump in her throat suddenly threatening to cut off her words. He had done this for her. Not for Iris, who until today he had never met, but for her, because he knew how much it mattered.
I honestly don't know what to say.
Except thank you, of course.
I don't know what would have happened if you hadn't been here. I might have actually paid him.
The thought of Iris living with that. She broke off, not wanting to finish the thought.
I guess we better go back in and let Retta know no one's dead.
42. Retta was weeping quietly when they walked back into the house, cradling Iris and crooning some indecipherable tune. She glanced up, blinking to clear her vision.
Where's Ray?
I don't think he'll be around for a while, Wade said gently. We had a conversation. I think he understands that Iris is better off here with you.
Retta nodded, though she was clearly bewildered. She closed her eyes briefly, heaving a shaky breath.
I need to smoke. Can you look after her while I'm outside?
Christy Lynn turned to Wade.
Can you?
I'd like to talk to Retta a minute. Retta planted a kiss on Iris's pale head.
Nani needs to go out on the porch for a few minutes. Can you stay and color with the nice man?
Iris turned wide eyes toward Wade. The hard angles disappeared from Wade's face as he bent down to meet Iris's gaze.
Christy Lynn showed me the fish you colored for her. She has it on her refrigerator, so all her friends can see it. Do you think you could color one for me? Maybe a blue one?
Iris eyed him warily, but took his hand when he extended it. Christy Lynn watched as he led her to the coloring books scattered in the corner and settled down beside her on the rug, as if coloring with a three-year-old was something he did every day. Retta struggled up out of her chair, already patting her pockets for her cigarettes. She moved slowly, almost brokenly, as she stepped out onto the porch and groped her way to her chair. Her hands trembled as she plucked a cigarette from the crumpled packet. It took three tries to light it. She was quiet for a time, pulling in smoke, pushing it out. Finally, she turned to Christy Lynn.
I'm sorry about my grandson. He's not a nice man.
You knew, didn't you? That's why you didn't want to show him the papers, because you were afraid he'd try something like this. Retta nodded wearily as she blew out a lungful of smoke.
I knew he'd get his hands on the money if he found out, so I kept it quiet. But he showed up one day, and the papers were on the kitchen table. He doesn't give a damn about that girl. Neither does Ellen. They just see dollar signs.
Why didn't you tell me?
He told me not to.
She closed her eyes, her lids blue-veined and paper-thin.
He's got an awful temper.
Are you afraid of him, Retta? Christy Lynn asked, already knowing the answer.
It isn't just that. He and Ellen are the only family I have, the only help I have. They do my shopping and my errands, run me to the doctor when I need to go, pick up my medicine. I don't know what I'd do if they quit, but that isn't the worst of it.
She paused, crushed out her cigarette, then fumbled to light another.
One day I'll be gone, and then what? They were my only hope for Iris, which is why I've been so torn. Part of me hoped the money might bring them around. But then today, when I heard him saying those things and saw the look on Iris's little face, I knew I couldn't let him anywhere near her. I'd rather let the county have her. At least she'll have a chance.
Christy Lynn felt the words like a physical shock. They had been Missy's words, too. But they weren't true. She, of all people, knew that. You don't mean that. You can't. There must be some local family who'd be willing to take her. A decent family. My lawyer could arrange the adoption.
With who? Retta countered, near tears now. There's no one. Unless...
Christy Lynn lifted her eyes, waiting.
You could take her.
She'd said it softly but quickly, like the snick of a trap springing shut.
You could take her away from here. Give her a better life. A real life.
There was a dull buzzing in Christy Lynn's head, a sudden weight at the center of her chest.
Retta, I can't. She needs you, Christy Lynn. I've thought so for a while, but I knew it for sure when I saw the two of you at Honey's grave. And you need her.
Christy Lynn pushed to her feet and moved to the railing, as far from Retta as she could get on the tiny porch. It isn't possible, Retta. I can't say why, it just isn't.
Because of Honey?
Because of me. There are a million reasons I can't do what you're asking, but none of them have to do with Iris, or with Honey. Iris needs a mother, and I'm not mother material. It's why I never had children of my own.
People change, Retta told her gently. They grow. One day something happens, and all of a sudden everything's different.
Christy Lynn shook her head, unable to bear the naked plea in Retta's eyes.
That girl needs a mama, Christy Lynn. And you need something to do with that great big heart of yours. You need each other. And that stuff about not being mother material, that's nonsense.
Christy Lynn turned finally, arms crossed as if to ward off this terrible thing she was being asked to do. But then, it had always been inevitable, hadn't it? That Retta would at least make the suggestion? Because she didn't know, couldn't know, that handing her great-granddaughter over to Christy Lynn would essentially be trading one disaster for another. And the last thing Iris needed was one more disaster in her life. I know you're desperate, Retta, and I'll help in any way I can, but I can't do what you're asking. Her voice began to fracture as tears threatened. I'm so sorry. The door opened. Wade stepped out onto the porch.
She's asleep, he said softly.
Before noticing Christy Lynn's stricken face,
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong.
Christy Lynn swiped at her tears before they could fall.
I need to go. Can you bring me my purse from inside?
She was already making her way down the steps, moving blindly toward the rover.
I'm sorry, Retta. I'll call you. I have to go.
Wade said nothing as he held out his hand for the car keys. He had no idea what just happened, but one look at Christy Lynn's face was enough to tell him she had no business behind the wheel. Her eyes were blank as she climbed up into the passenger seat, her movements heavy and deliberate, like someone trying very hard not to fall apart. She said nothing as they pulled away from the house. Nothing as they headed back through Riddlesville's dismal downtown. Nothing as they merged back onto the highway. Finally, he had to ask,
"Can you tell me what happened back there?"
"I don't want to talk about it."
She turned away then, angling her body toward the window and effectively ending the discussion. Wade fought the urge to press for an answer. There was still so much about her he didn't understand. But he had learned that pushing would get him nowhere. She slept for a time. At least he thought she was sleeping. It wasn't until they had crossed over into Virginia that he realized she was awake and quietly crying. He took the ramp for the next rest stop, pulled into a space near the picnic area, and cut the engine. Christy Lynn sat up abruptly, wiping both eyes with her fists.
"What are we doing?"
"I thought maybe you'd like to splash some water on your face. I'll get you a drink from the machine."
"Thanks," she said thickly, "but I'm good."
For the second time since climbing back into the rover, Wade found himself swallowing his first reaction, which was to point out that she wasn't anything close to good. Instead, he reached for her hand.
"What can I do?"
She looked away.
"Nothing. You can't do anything."
"I'd like to help."
For a moment, the tension in her body seemed to ebb, and her hand relaxed in his. And then, before he realized what she was up to, she had unfastened her seatbelt and was bolting from the car. He scurried out after her, but tangled briefly in his own seatbelt, giving her a head start. She ran like a wild thing, panicked and stumbling as she scrambled down the overgrown trail and disappeared into the trees. He didn't bother calling out. She wouldn't have stopped anyway. Instead, he focused on closing the distance between them, pounding down the path until he was close enough to grab her arm and jerk her to a halt.
"Where are you going?"
She rounded on him, face splotched and tear-streaked.
"Leave me alone."
"I can't do that. You're upset, and you have no idea where you're going."
He stepped back, giving her some space, but remained alert, in case he needed to sprint after her again.
"Talk to me, please. Let me help."
He was expecting another sharp retort, but suddenly, all the fight seemed to go out of her. Like a balloon with a slow leak, she went limp, sagging against him with a choking sob. He led her back down the trail toward the parking lot, steering her toward one of the concrete benches, and for a few moments, they sat in silence.
"I'm sorry," she said, after several minutes.
She had stopped weeping, but her voice was thick and congested. She dragged a sleeve across her face, mopping her eyes.
"I didn't mean to lose it like that."
"Don't be sorry. Just tell me what happened."
She looked down at the ground, hacking at the dirt with the heel of one boot.
"Retta asked me to take Iris. Permanently."
Wade's eyes shot wide.
"You mean adopt her?"
"Yes."
It was little more than a whisper, barely audible, and as he studied her face, he was reminded of the disaster victims he had interviewed over the years, stunned into silence, as if she had survived some terrible calamity and was only now coming to terms with the devastation. He fought to keep his face neutral.
"That's a pretty presumptuous thing to ask someone you hardly know."
Christy Lynn blotted her eyes again, then shook her head.
"Not presumptuous. Desperate. She's terrified that when she dies, Iris will end up in foster care.
Or with Ray." You've already gone above and beyond, Christy Lynn.
I know.
Then why are you crying?
Nothing. It's nothing.
It's not nothing, Christy Lynn. I just had to chase you into the woods.
She was quiet for a time, her gaze distant and clouded.
I know what it's like, she said finally.
To have no one.
To be on your own in the world.
I know what that's like.
Wade reached for her hand, then thought better of it, afraid he might spook her again.
How old were you when you lost your mother?
She blinked at him. A fresh pair of tears slid down her cheeks.
I didn't lose her.
But I thought...
That she was dead, yes. It's what I wanted you to think.
Wade wasn't sure what he expected, but it sure as hell wasn't this.
Why?
Because I wanted it to be true, she said, with a watery hiccup. And because, as far as I was concerned, it was.
I was 16 the last time I saw her.
She was in the hospital,
under arrest for smashing her boyfriend in the mouth with a bottle after he sliced her face open with a paring knife, and for being a thief and a junkie. She went to jail, and I went to foster care. The news landed squarely in the center of Wade's solar plexus as the pieces fell into place. One vital element of the story, and suddenly everything made sense. Her obsession with Iris, her resolve to correct a parent's neglect, her determination to safeguard Iris's future. It all finally added up, and it was a gut-wrenching picture.
I don't know what to say. I guess I get why you've been torturing yourself over all this. How long were you in foster care?
Not long. I ran away. I lived on the street for almost 2 years.
Wade went quiet, absorbing the full weight of her words. 2 years on the streets, and little more than a child. The urge to wrap his arms around her was suddenly overwhelming.
Foster care was that bad? He asked instead.
It was for me. And when I think of Iris going through what I did, I just...
The words trailed off. She shook her head.
I can't bear it.
She was rocking back and forth now, drawn in on herself, worrying the underside of one wrist repeatedly with the ball of her thumb. Wade locked on the gesture, frowning as he tried to pull up a memory. And then he had it. The night on the deck when he'd asked about her scars. At the time it had seemed like nothing. Three small scars whose origins she claimed not to remember. Now, he wasn't so sure. He reached for her hand, surprised when she didn't resist.
I asked you about these ones, he said,
tracing a finger over the trio of crescent-shaped marks.
You said you didn't remember how you got them. But I think you do.
She nodded, and the tears began again. Wade had no idea what to say, no clue how to stem her pain. And so he said nothing, holding her hands instead and simply letting her cry. She had a right to her grief, a right to shudder whatever private hell she had endured, and to keep it shuddered if she so chose. And then, without any prompting on his part, the whole of it came pouring out.
43. Goose Creek, South Carolina, July 18th, 1998. Christy Lynn cracks open the bathroom door, checking to make sure the coast is clear before slipping out into the hall in her towel. After 2 months at the Hollies, she still feels like an intruder. The new kid everyone watches while pretending not to watch. She can hear the television downstairs, the 11 o'clock news punctuated by the steady sawing of Dennis Hawley's snores. He was usually asleep by now, aided in part by the six-pack he killed each night while his wife worked the night shift at Charleston Memorial. She reaches for the knob of her bedroom door,
trying to remember closing it in the first place. She can't, but isn't surprised. She's been in such a fog lately, still sleepwalking through most days. The room is dark.